to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got sound designer, sound supervisor, and just one nice guy, Scott Gershon.
Hi, Mike.
Next to him, we've got a fantastic drummer just got off tour, Forrest Robinson.
Hello, brother.
And next to him, we've got sound designer, composer, does a lot of movie trailers, Brandon Birdside.
Hello.
Other mic, Brandon.
It's 5-1.
Next to him, we've got just musician, drummer, one heck of a producer, Bill Burgess.
Hello, Mike.
And
he's all full of compliments
here
today, isn't he? Mm.
You know
I didn't
what?
Know I was any of those.
And next to Bill, we've got The Rock, the Iron Man of the podcast.
Iron Man.
Composer, programmer, and also a nice guy, Rob Arbatier.
Hello, Mike.
Guys, this is our 80th podcast.
What?
80.
No,
correction.
Very old.
Correction.
This is my 80th podcast.
All right. This is my 79.5.
Exactly. Actually, no, you count as 82 because you did call in.
And isn't Bobby doing leap year now at this point?
Yeah. Bobby who? No, I'm just kidding. Bobby's out busy. And today's going to be a great podcast. We've got some fantastic guests. We have sitting with us today our friend of the podcast. I think he's been on more than any other guest that we've had, Greg Ondo from Yamaha.
Good to be back.
And we also have another guest. This is the 80th show. We need to have another guest.
Mm-hmm.
And joining us all the way from Burbank.
What a long drive.
is sound designer extraordinaire and just also a nice guy, Diego Stucco.
Hi, everybody.
Diego, welcome.
Thanks, guys.
And it's just an honor to have you here. And I'm sure everybody's used your product at one time or another. And thank you for joining us.
No, thank you, guys.
We're going to visit with Diego and with Greg a little bit later. But like I said, this is our 80th podcast. And just want to pat ourselves on the back for a second. Okay, that's enough. Well, I just want to get into it. But for those of you listening for the first time, this is the Audio Nowcast, and we're a podcast where we talk about the audio industry. We've got sound designers, and we've got composers, and we've got musicians, and we've got, posers. That's me.
Sound designers here today than composers. More.
That's right.
Composers are out.
You're coming. Right.
Ooh, rush.
A lot of sound designers here.
Yeah.
Before we talk to Diego and to Greg, I wanted to tell you guys a couple things. Number one, sometimes we get it right on this podcast. Sometimes we're ahead.
Every once in a while, a blind squirrel finds a nut.
It's all an illusion.
No, if you remember, a couple podcasts ago, we had the topic of when is inspiration plagiarism. And we talked a little bit about, when are you crossing the line and about some of the legal ramifications. And I don't know if you guys know this, but right now there's a big case that's out there with Men at Work, with the Down Under. They're being sued by a small publisher for the song Down Under. And
How many years later?
They waited 25 years?
Yeah.
Probably just before the statute of limitations was going to run out.
Well, apparently what happened was the original songwriter passed away. And the rights transferred to another company, and that company started a legal process against Men at Work. And the crazy thing is it's a small part of a song that they say that they lifted, and if you hear the melody against the Men at Work song, you'll
drop in acid.
Yeah, well, you'll realize that they're close, and that they said that it was inspired because they wanted it's part of their culture, but they did not lift it. They did not copy it. And the judge ruled against Men at Work. And now they're seeking millions and millions of dollars on Dude. Something that's money that's been spent a long,
long time ago.
You people, gotta be kidding.
Yeah, man. and it's lighting up the boards because people are saying, you know, if the inspiration, it's exactly what we talked about. When is inspiration when you're inspired by a song or inspired by a style?
Well, what about anything with 1/4/5 in it? I mean, you know, blues. I mean, you just go on and on.
Well, that's
what about Robert Johnson and all those guys?
I mean, that's exactly what they're saying. It's like,
come on, dude.
Crazy that this judge A ruled against them, and it's crazy that they're trying to get so much money so many years later. I mean, come on, that money's not going to be around.
No,
you know that money was spent.
Yeah, you know what? If you're going to sue a band, try it not to make it a one hit wonder 25 years later.
Yeah. Sue the Rolling Stones or
exactly.
somebody.
Sue somebody still, who still has some money.
They're right. still making money. But, I just find that interesting. And I think it's really scary for songwriters nowadays, because if you're going to have these little labels going through all their catalog to see if they can find a pattern that matches for like four measures.
Because they don't want to work anymore.
Oh, you know, yeah, because they're, you know, it's going to turn
bottom
into like
feeding.
Bottom
well,
feeding.
Like tech, like the tech lawsuits that are the patent infringement cases on technology side, you know, it's just ridiculous. So, I just want to tell you that A, we talked about this a long time ago. And B, it's scary that some of this stuff is coming true, you know, because it's really going to affect, how we work. And well, Rob, you're a composer. You write a lot of music. Have you ever heard one of your cues later on and then heard something else that sounded similar to it? And
oh, absolutely.
I thought, I hear stuff oh no, or
it actually later. The time it happened the most, because at different points in my career, I've written for different kinds of media, but the place where it really happened the most was in trailers. Back in, around the Godzilla days and like the late 90s, we did a lot of big action adventure trailers, and every big trailer we scored, I guess it was because these were such big movies and they had such a big impact, but every one of these big trailers we scored, then we would hear 50 other trailers that sounded just like them.
Right.
Not close enough that we could sue,
right.
But it was the same instrumentation, same style.
Well,
and it was always, and back then it was sort of a new cool thing to be mixing orchestra with really electronic sounds, and it was amazing. We'd hear stuff that sounded like an alternate version of something we had done.
Right.
But
how does that work now with everybody working with loop libraries where everyone's using
sure
the same
licks?
Sure
makes it a lot
licks.
Harder to sue.
Yeah, there's string things, there's licks, there's little, especially when they, you know, they'll use a wooden flute, you know, some kind of little thing, and all of a sudden they'll... Because that happened in us with us. We were doing a video game and writing some music for, and one of our guys used a lick and it was great and fine. And then all of a sudden, the game company went, "Wait a minute, somebody else used the same lick."
Oh God!
Well, if you're using samples from a library,
well, it's from a sample from a library, and they're like, "So you didn't write it?" And then all of a sudden, it became a big deal because the sample libraries are so real sounding that they think that you literally brought somebody in. They play down the part.
That's the point, you know, just to make something that is really good quality and everything.
If a lot of music clients realize that these, you know, brilliant riffs that they think the composer they hired wrote are actually from a library. I mean, going back to even when Presonus first came out with their library of, string riffs and glisses and all this stuff. And a lot of composers were using it, and it sounded really realistic, and it sounded great. All the clients thought, wow, we're getting this real-sounding orchestra for, you know, a lot less money. The problem is then when they call the composer, though, and they've made a change, and all of a sudden that gliss has to be in a different key.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It doesn't sound the same, especially back in those days when it meant it had to speed up or slow down.
Well, how about distorted reality? I mean, you heard that
that's been used
all
to
over
death
the place.
And back. Yeah.
You know?
Stylus. You're right.
Yeah, or stylus. You know, it's a real composer is going to use these libraries in a way that it's not going to sound like everybody else using the library. If you just call up an orchestral patch and hit a middle C and it plays a whole passage for you, and there are libraries like that, it's hard to call yourself a composer. You're more an editor at that point.
I've always on the other side of the issue where I did a thing for NBC, it's an unnamed show, but it was basically template stuff, and they wanted it as close as they could legally get it.
That's always the question.
Well,
how
that
close
is the
can
question.
They legally get it?
That's coming at it from the bringing it up with the real low, you know, the that side of it where there's the people with no reputation are facing this issue even more than the people with big reputation.
Yeah, no, that's true.
But you played me that little sequence with the men at work. Ableton, right there, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Because the moment you play something, it's only a lick. It's a small little couple measure passages of something. Any loop library is going to do that. Yeah. And what happens if somebody does it and then another person does it?
Yeah.
Does automatically they say, wait a minute, that's...
Yeah, what happens to every DJ mix?
Well, that's why this is a big deal.
Every rap tune. I mean,
every rap tune.
In London, I'll better pull this. In London, this was like not even 2 weeks ago. They actually had, I don't remember if it's CNN, you know, UK or something like that, CNN Europe or something. But there was an actual special that it was called Our DJs. Wait a minute. It was like Our DJs Artist or Our DJs.
Was it Frontline?
It was something serious.
I saw the one Frontline.
Because they're talking about, you know, DJs, and they're all trying to, they're acting like they're composers or artists and that kind of thing. But it says, well, they're spinning music that's obviously already been written and played, you know. So there's something going down with that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with this whole thing. But what's really sad is music being a free gift and something that actually heals the world and brings people together, which, you know, I certainly believe like someone like Michael Jackson and, you know, Stevie Wonder and so many artists have done by bringing nations together. And it's folks are losing their freaking minds over it. And
yeah, but the problem
sucks.
Is if you wrote it and then Michael made billions on it and you're still poor,
that's a problem.
You want a piece of that.
Well, sure.
You know, I mean, I see both sides of it.
Well, I just want to say that this is definitely something as musicians and composers and, you know, even sound designers. And I'm sure with sound design, you probably see your patches lifted
all over the place. My stuff all the time. I mean, every TV show that I watch, I happen to hear one of the grooves from RMX or a patch from Omnisphere or whatever. It's always at the end how you use it, though, because as you were saying, if you take a sample and you just play it out of the sample library, it's not really a creative way to use it. It wasn't supposed to be used that way. Mm-hmm. The way sound designers and instrument makers create their instruments is to be used in a creative way. And what I can see now compared to 10 years ago, it's the difference in their products. 10 years ago, you could see an orchestral library. You press one key and it makes a tune, okay? Mm-hmm. Now you have an orchestral library where you have a script that generates an arpeggio or something that is... It's still a performance, but it's not a static performance. You can manipulate that as you like. That makes the difference between a...
It's less music concrete, where you're taking snippets of different music and creating a new song.
But even at that level, there must be something that you bring on the table. I mean, the library, it's just a starting point.
Right.
And actually, every sample library in the licensing agreement says that you gotta combine different sounds together. You cannot really use one sound by itself.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I know Spectrasonics, they have a pretty,
extensive
licensing. I mean, the way they do their licensing and what you can and what you can't do, with their stuff. I mean, and I think it makes sense. I mean, they're protecting themselves at the same time giving you a lot of creative freedom.
You see, making a sample library, it seems easy, but actually you are sometimes crossing the line when you create a sample that is so complete by itself. And it happens like that because you just love to be creative. You know, you just love to create a groove that you just played and it sounds great. So the licensing agreement always relied on common good sense at the end of the day. It's like, listen, this is what we do, this is what you do, and together we do that.
That's true.
It really relies on people, you know, that understand how everything works together.
Mm-hmm. You know what I would say? You have a much stronger Burbank accent than I expected. I just want to point that out.
Should I take it as a compliment?
Yes. It's just not what I remember as a Burbank accent.
He's Canadian.
Well, I will say, if you're listening, you want to find out a little bit more and you want to be really, really mad, then go on YouTube and just Google Men at Work and Down Under, and you'll hear the two different versions. And
I thought it was pretty different.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of them that are very obvious, but I thought that this was a lot more subtle and not necessarily the actual melody of the vocals, which I thought was
the copyrighted part. It's not the vocal, though. It's the flute. It's the flute. The flute part is the one that they're going after. That
you know what would be interesting? It would be interesting to do a blind test and say, people, we give you these two tunes. What can you say about it?
Yeah.
Well, that's what it comes down to in a courtroom. I mean, it just, that's what we talked about on the podcast earlier when we were talking about this stuff. It comes down to what a judge or a jury would say. Because it's very hard. You can't say, well, it's 3/16th notes, you know, too close or, you know, none of that. It can't, it's not an equation. It's just basically, does it sound like you ripped them off or not?
Right. But it's surprising they came to that conclusion, though, because you listened to those two.
And well, I'll tell you what, the example that I played for you guys, where you hear the kids singing, that's, you can kind of hear it, but I heard a version where it was a flute actually playing the melody against the flute that they did. And they're close, but they're not the same, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's still, even though you got it closer by getting the flute, it's not the same.
But I guess, you know.
But it has the same flavor.
But instrumentation doesn't matter.
But it used to be like five consecutive notes to have a melody that you can also like hum, yada, yada, yada. But like when you talk about grooves, oh, come on. I mean, there's already so many grooves out there and everyone's ripping.
That's true.
I mean, is it drum rhythms? Is it sound design, ear candy on a song?
You can't tell anymore.
Is it a bass part? Is it weird, you know? Gated drums.
It's intent. Intent.
Yeah, and on this one, it's definitely, it was the flute part. But
are they just merely maybe exoticizing the flute?
You know, it's, sound. I don't know. I don't know, but apparently the judge who, you know, which really kind of ticks me off in the first place, that this judge can...
There's only 12 notes, by the way.
Yeah, but that he can make that kind of a
Was it a U.S.
rule.
Judge or Australian judge?
It was Australian. It all happened down there, so, you
but
know.
I will suggest, though, I realize we're leaving the topic, but I would suggest, if you're going to sue somebody, though, sue them during the decade that they actually have money. Seriously, I mean,
all the royalties just came in.
There you go.
Yeah. What are they hoping to get?
Well, we are moving on. The other thing that we were kind of, you know, right when we were talking about this was I read an article about DigiDesign and Pro Tools, and once again, Avid taking over and DigiDesign kind of going by the wayside. And the article was, should you drop Pro Tools? And it was a whole article about Pro Tools. And
is this where we start the Darth Vader theme?
No. But all I was saying is, it was kind of the same points that we were making, you know? And a lot of people, like what we were saying, you know, they're saying, well, it's not really DigiDesign, it's Pro Tools. And a lot of other people are saying yes, but you still have the hardware dongle. And so I just, you know, guys, we're hitting the topics, man, that matter. I just want to let you know.
Right. We're ahead of the curve.
You're getting nerves.
There you go. moving on.
Who's DigiDesign?
There you go. I wanted to talk about something that really, really kind of ticks me off. And it also deals with what we talked about the last time, where how sometimes you just need to edit yourself. Sometimes you need to, you know, things that you think are really good ideas.
Pinto
really,
beans versus
really
black
aren't.
Beans?
No, I heard the most amazing album that I've heard in a long time. I love this album, and at the same time, I hate it.
Pee Wee Herman's Great Adventure.
No.
Where's the Lady Gaga?
BT's newest album. His new record, it's called These Hopeful Machines. Guys, I really would like to have suggested that you go out and buy it, but I can't because it's the most infuriating. I mean, it just gets me so mad.
So what is it?
No,
what exactly is it?
The thing that gets me ticked off, and I can't even speak about it right now.
Find a way, brother.
They released it, the A side and the B side, on two tracks that are an hour long each. That's the only way it's available for download is on two stinking tracks.
Man.
And let me tell you, that sounds all, whoa, you're supposed to sit there and listen to the whole thing. When you're on minute 25 and you accidentally bump the back button on your stereo in the car.
You're back at cassette.
Right.
You know, Prince did that with the CD where the whole CD was one track.
And it was just infuriating. Exactly,
the very first thing I did when I got that CD was make a copy and put IDs on it.
Right. See, and this is a download, and it's like, you know, I spent $17 on it when it first
it's
came out
because
they
it's
had a bunch
art.
They had a bunch of remixes, and they had, you know, it's a great album, and it's a sound designer's dream. It really sounds great. There's some great songs on there, but you know, just to have two tracks and you get like in the like minute. Seriously, that happened to me. I was driving home and I accidentally bumped the back button in the stereo.
And you were on side B.
I was so pissed off.
Which actually brings up a more intelligent point. Why doesn't somebody make an app that rides on top of iTunes that you can just drop IDs into it?
Well, because
there's something to be.
I just don't think most people are going to release an album on 2 1-hour tracks, you know? I mean, there's a lot of music there, and it's great music, but
that's pretty obnoxious.
How can I recommend it to, like, you know, my friends and say, yeah, well, you'll really like the moment around, like, 1837.
It's redefining the concept of single, you know. It just
that's
all you
that's
got.
Not a single, that's a
unique it's a unique.
Now
if you broke everything down you wouldn't be talking about it.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if the CD, someone told me that the CD has pin numbers on it, you know, so at least on the CD they did it right. But
well, then they did it that way, what is the possible reason for not having the download have IDs?
I you know what, I don't know, other than, you know, they're
money,
trying to be. No,
I'll ask him.
Yeah, and I know Bill. Bill's friends with him, and I know I read a little blurb that, you know, it was trying to bring back the album experience. But I'm sorry, let me control that. You know, there's a way to, because the songs.
That's the dark side of the moon. It's over.
Yeah, and it's not like the transitions were. Oh my gosh, this is so creative the way they did the transitions. I don't know if I'm in the next song or if I don't know if I'm in the song before, or you can't find a place, because generally at the end of the songs they go into this little paddy thing and they go into a little ambient thing and then it kind of translates into the next one. My goodness, just freaking cut it right there.
You know what my guess is that mix that you bought is the first installment, and then the bunch of mixes that are coming are more DJ ready, because what that is preventing DJs from just knocking that right out.
Well, yes, but it also encourages piracy. I guarantee
you. Think
you
encourages it, or the other way?
Absolutely. No, I think it encourages. I think somebody has, as a matter of fact, I know someone split it up already, and you can go out there and you could download it and trade songs and things like that. Because not every song's golden on this thing. Some songs are better than the other ones, but. My goodness, to do something like that on an album that took 4 years to make, and it's, I will tell you, it's a fantastic album. It really is awesome, and someday I will not be pissed off and I'll try to listen to it again. But it's all about, you know, self-editing. I'm sure if someone would have, like, hey, let's try living with this for like a day to see if it's even usable. Because something like that is gonna cost them sales. You know, the diehard fans will always buy it. But, you know, you want to grab the casual fan. I mean, what casual fan is going to go out there and, like, commit, you know, an hour? And, my goodness, make sure you don't hit the wrong button on your iPod, because.
At least cassettes, you can do a search, rewind fast search. You can't even do that with this.
No.
Oh, man.
It was just, I don't know. Am I overreacting, guys? Just tell
me.
Well,
how much is each track?
So, Mike.
Yeah.
Who's BT?
How much did this cost? Was it the same as an album?
Well, I bought it on the day it was released, and it was like $17, which I don't mind spending good money for an artist that I like. I mean, he should make money off his music, and so it's like $17. I don't know how much each track was. I think you can do only an album only on those two long tracks, so it's not like you can buy them as singles.
Yeah, well, you know? It just breaks you from this, you know, buying a song individually.
Yeah,
so.
But I just think it's a really. I think in the long run, it's you know, it's only going to hurt him, and well, it's going to hurt me because I'm going to do that again sometime. You know. But I don't know. I just thought that was a really. Am I missing something here? Is
no,
that not a bad idea?
That's a big, what were you thinking?
Yeah. It's just.
Not for Prince, but for BT.
Yeah. No, well, I hated it with Prince, too, but it was easy enough to, you know, take the CD and
circumvent.
Cut it up, which is the same thing I would do if I wanted to listen to a whole BT album.
Yeah, but that's, yeah. I mean, come on, that's called work, and dude, I don't know. I mean, I guess I could, but I could probably torrent it and find it already cut up by now, you know?
Yeah, you
I mean,
could.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, I'm not saying anything that's, you know, it's probably out there already because somebody else was all ticked off and they did it and hits the torrent sites, which
yeah,
I do not.
Yeah, 8-year-old kid already spliced it up.
Yeah. I do not endorse that at all. Bio music. But I can understand if you were frustrated like me and you were like in minute 37 and did that. But anyway. All right, moving on.
But you vented. That's what counts.
I vented and that's what counts. Actually, you know what? We won't move on right now because we're almost up to a break.
Ooh. You know what? I think we should just go straight through. With no breaks, no indexes.
Yeah, no Sunday.
Not our BT. We're going to do the next six podcasts in a row.
No, but I do have something we could talk about for like 3 minutes. Greg, how was the NAMM show for you guys?
NAMM shows were great for us. We had a lot of artists. So we had like Bone Thugs and Harmony. We had Peter Frampton at the booth. We had Rob doing demos for us. Mm-hmm. And we had big crowds until like the last 5 minutes of the show. Whereas a lot of people, you know, we kind of had the football game on on Sunday. But it was really busy and sales were very good.
Now, guys were packed.
Yeah.
Although this is the first show that I didn't see a Rob demo.
Sit through my demo.
I didn't sit through
your
demo.
They were golden.
Were they?
Oh, yeah.
I think we mentioned this on the last podcast, but yeah, I was
kind of bummed.
You can
probably find them on a torrent someplace.
Someone stole Rob's song.
Everything good over at Yamaha Steinberg?
Yeah, it's been really good.
Steinmaha?
Yeah, so we actually kind of, our hardware has actually been selling, you know, it's increased in sales. Almost about 300% in the last 6 months.
Wow. Those interfaces they have are excellent. They're really good.
Well, I guess people are leaving Pro Tools.
That's a big world. There's enough to go around for everyone. Yeah.
People can use a lot of systems and have great results. So, you know, Rob, you've used the systems and we've had a lot of people, you know, and there's a great thread on gear sluts where there's kind of a comparison between the MR816 and the Prism Orpheus. Where they did kind of a loopback test, and a lot of people would pick the Prism Orpheus as the better sounding one. It was actually the MR816.
Really?
Yeah. So it was like 23 pages long.
That was a pretty big price difference.
Over the Prism.
Yeah.
Because that's like a small house in between those two, isn't it?
Yeah, they're really expensive.
Yeah, about 4,000.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, yeah, the mic pre's are really well received and people are kind of getting the integration of the hardware and software so you don't have to kind of go to like a third party control panel app mixer
to do routing. It's really well done.
That's great.
Where do you find most of your market in for Nuendo?
Nuendo, we have Nuendo 5, which should be out probably May-ish or so. So, you know, we have a lot of, you know, we have a lot of kind of high-end artists doing it. Like I was just at Eric Johnson's studio last week, and he just did his whole album, Nuendo 4, and just, you know, he's just like the happiest he's ever been with any of his results. You know, we still have like Electronic Arts and a lot of, you know, National Public Radio, a lot of kind of large facilities that are running Nuendo. And Cubase has been incredibly popular with, you know, musicians, especially with the Very Audio and the pitch correction. So that's been incredibly well-received.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We are going to take a break. Ooh. Dang it. Because unlike BT, we are going to put a little pause in here. So I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break now. And when we come back, we are going to visit with Diego and talk about, well, for one thing, making music with trees. All right. So we'll see you on the other side.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, I was ranting, but I feel better now, guys. Thank you.
Live drugs and leaves, you know.
But today on the podcast, we are honored to have Diego Stucco with us. And Diego is a sound designer, and he designs not only sounds but also patches. He has a couple famous ones on Omnisphere, like the Burning Piano. But
famous, you mean?
Yeah. But also, he's done some of the drum stuff for RMX. Mm-hmm. And did you on Atmosphere also? Did you do some stuff?
Yeah. I was
so
there too.
Many of you guys, I mean, if you use any of this Petrasonic stuff, you've probably used some of his sounds. And Diego, first of all, before we get into anything else, I just need to know burning piano, did you get in trouble at all for that?
No, no, but it was a windy day. So right. I really had to take care of the fire before, because the fire was jumping on the fence that I had behind the piano. So I had a big bucket of water just next to me ready in case. And we actually showed portions of those videos at the NAMM show
right.
2006, I remember. Well, anyway, it was really homemade, an homemade session. It was an idea that started like that, and I just did it.
So, really quick, why don't you explain a little bit about the burning piano patch for
sure.
these people?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's people think that because we had this topic coming up several times, people think that it's just one sound. You know, it's just the burning piano, and they accused me of wasting a piano. Okay. First of all, it was a 200 euros piano. It was a wreck.
Right.
I had it there for a while, and I couldn't really do anything because it didn't stay in tune. You know, I hated the idea of just leaving it there. So I just wanted to do something wild and creative and productive at the same time.
Right.
So I just brought it outside in the garden, and I just decided to do some sounds with it. So the idea was to turn it, to light it on fire and record. First of all, I multi-sampled as many notes as I could because obviously the thing was getting...
it was burning.
It was burning. So I really wanted to record the C2, but boom, it's not. C2 gone. Okay. C-sharp. So yeah. But the cool thing about the burning piano is that it's an entire session where I recorded a bunch of additional sounds and noises, like the strings popping out.
Right.
Everything, the hammers burning, the strings bending, because I didn't really know exactly what to expect. But when I did, I actually find out on the go, because basically the strings were like, and that was a very cool effect.
Right. Oh, sounds like it.
Yeah, yeah, like natural pitch bending. And then I basically posted everything. And Eric saw the video. I said, great, I love it. Do you have enough noise? I said, well, I can do some more. So basically at night, I did another session where I was burning the strings with a gas flame lighter. I was just putting the thing like this and pulling the strings with a hammer. So there's a bunch of stuff. And I heard those things used. Actually, there's a TV show called Shark Tank.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the effects that breaks the scenes, it's a sound from the burning piano.
No.
it's the burning piano. So I hope it was an helpful and useful session. It was totally destructive. But
what did you record it with?
Rode microphones, because I've been using Rode for a long time, just because I wanted to find something, you know, affordable in case I was going to just burn
so
everything.
So does the piano still exist?
No. It's completely gone.
It's yeah.
No, because then after that I did another session where I was just chopping it down.
Dropping it from a tall building.
Wow. You're going to get the hate mail now.
I have a wild idea that I didn't do so far, but it's just kind of stupid. I'm not going to do it. But anyway, once I started with the destruction stage of that piano, it just continued until the end. So there's nothing left.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I will say it's a great patch. It's not like a, you know, like you were saying, it's not just a piano on fire screaming. It's actually, it's pretty cool. And
we know that Jordan Rudess, the keyboard player of Dream Theater, he wanted to be one of the first guys to use it on a record.
Great.
Yeah. So that was cool.
That's great. Now let's talk a little bit about your sound design. Mm-hmm. Obviously, talking with Scott here, you used the Rode microphones. How many mics did you have set up for something like that? Since you didn't know, I mean, it looked like you had a ton.
I usually start with four, because
for stereos, for monos,
For everything. Because I like to combine different sources. I like to create the sounds, the final sound after.
Yeah.
I don't really want to think about it while I'm doing the session because I need to think about the instrument or whatever performance is involved. So having so many microphones allow me to have a lot of flexibility to combine different sources, to exclude a source that maybe was too noisy or something happened to the microphone because you never really know. And so it's basically a minimum four, and then I go up to eight. But once you have eight, it's already a lot. I mean, it's a lot of... stuff to choose from.
I gotcha. So a lot of times when you're designing these patches and doing the recording, you just go out there and you know you want to grab the sound, but you don't know yet how you're going to combine
it. I have a pretty clear idea of how the sound is going to be generated, so the positioning and everything is clear. But I want to keep the last moment, you know, the moment when I actually mix the sound with all these different sources, when I'm sitting in front of my speakers, away from the instrument, because you can't really tell if it's a burning piano. You have the noise of the fire just buzzing in your ear. You can't really tell if it's mixed or not.
Right.
And, and especially in those cases, it really is something that you have to mix.
Now, when you get the elements for the patch, what program do you use? Do you use, like, Kontakt, or what do you use when you start building your
I do everything in Pro Tools.
Pro Tools.
Just going back to that. Yeah, I've been using Pro Tools for a long, long time.
Right.
But the way I use it's kind of different than the way you would normally use it. I really use it as an instrument. So I can shape sounds the way I want. I don't really use Kontakt. I have it. I have the entire package and everything, but I don't really use it.
Right.
It's more like once I created the sounds, if it goes into Omnisphere, it just goes into Omnisphere. It will be mapped in a certain way, and it will sound in a certain way.
I got you.
If I'm doing something else, I might use the XS24 with Logic.
As a sound designer, is there a development backdoor that you have into Omnisphere so that you can do the programming with all the really cool, you know, the filtering and all the cool effects?
Well,
and that?
You know, at the moment, there's no way to import samples into Omnisphere, so obviously there is a way to bring samples in. I'm not going to go into details.
No, I'm not that young. Yeah, I guess that was kind of an obvious question.
Yeah, but I felt it coming.
No, I just think it's really interesting the way sound designers, you know, and the tools that people put into their products to not only serve the user but also serve the people on the backside making, you know, the sounds and things like that, you know, for the different patches that you guys have and things like
that. Yeah, it's always a combined process. You know how to create samples because you know how they will come together with the instrument. And I'm sure it's different for everybody. Every company has their own secrets and systems and way to work.
You don't have to tell us any secrets.
I'm not.
You know, your first point of creating samples that aren't so complete is excellent, because when I got my first copy of Absinthe, it just blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
But Absinthe 5, every patch is so completely and fully developed that they never sit in the track. There's never any room to use it.
It gets boring.
It's just an ego trip. Every patch is an ego trip, and I can't use it anymore.
Yeah, well, the reason why – well, first of all, you know, Omnisphere, it's a real synthesizer because it has a real-time generation of waveforms inside. So this thing combined with the huge core library really makes it flexible instrument.
Right.
The samples are polished to the way we think they should be, you know, because the samples has to sound great. But what you can do on top of that with the instrument really gives you the flexibility to make whatever you want. Right. You can decide to really shape it in a different way by moving stuff around. It's not like a static. And that's the major difference between sample libraries in the old days and instruments like Omnisphere today.
Right.
It's the kind of flexibility that you can achieve when it comes to sound creation.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of flexibility, I know Brandon showed me some amazing stuff that he's done with Omnisphere, with the cool. With the filtering and the LFOs and
the
stuff like that.
Or the sort of I guess it's the you know, you can draw on your own sort of filters.
It definitely is a sound designer's dream. If you know filters. If you love synths and stuff, you can.
That brings me to a question.
Okay,
a sound designer's dream. It would be if I could import samples into it.
It's a possibility that it's out there. It's a possibility that Eric said many times he's not ruling it out. But for now, since there's so much stuff to explore with what you have, and it's funny because the demo that I did at the NAMM show was actually a masterclass to show how you can use the complex envelopes to create your own rhythmic patch. There were so many people saying, I didn't know I could do that. So every time you see that kind of response, it's a confirmation that there's still a lot to explore within the instruments before going to the next stage. But even that, there's always new patches and new stuff coming. It's an alive instrument. So in the process, there might be a possibility also like that.
That would be a powerful sampler.
Absolutely, yeah. But that opens a new, completely new territory because, you know, a sampler is a different machine. Sure. It really has to offer certain capabilities in the way you map samples and stuff. It's really a different. Right. Omnisphere is a synthesizer. The way it's been created. Yeah, it's been created as being a powerful synth. So
if you're a diehard Logic person like myself, you would never wonder that about Omnisphere. You would just try to drag it onto Omnisphere and drop, because that's what Logic does a lot. If you ever wonder that same thing in Logic, that's how there's a lot of backdoors in Logic where you can drag and drop stuff right onto the interface and just try it.
I use Logic just rarely, but yeah. I believe it's a...
So does Rob. Rob uses it rarely also. He rarely uses it.
Every day of my life.
Well, that's great. Now, let me ask you, are there any patches in Omnisphere or any of the libraries that you've done that are like your favorite? Besides, I mean, I know the Burning Piano gets a lot of press, but it may not necessarily be your favorite. I mean, you may have like, I mean, which one?
One of my favorite is the Luminosonic, which is the sounds I created out of the light bulbs. And that was kind of cool because it happened by accident. I just had a light bulb on my desk, and I hit it like that. I said, oh, wait, there's a sound in there. But it's so tiny, and there's so much noise on top of that because it's a weak sound. So to me, it was really cool as a sound designer being able to extract that sound and make it playable as an instrument.
It's the sound of the filament?
Of the filament, yes.
Just when it
yes,
shakes?
Yes, exactly, yeah.
And that's an Omnisphere?
Yeah, it's basically like having the power of using a microscope on a sound. And that's basically the concept of the psychoacoustic sampling that we've been talking about.
Right.
Is the idea of, you know, finding a new perspective in how you see sounds.
What kind of mic pre did you use to capture that?
All sort. I don't even remember exactly which session I did, but there was Millennia's, Manley's, Presonus. It depends really. But personally, I never really relied on a specific thing, just like, if I don't have this, I'm not going to create my sound. Mm-hmm. I never really believed in these kind of limitations. Right. I always tried to get the most out of what I had. Right. I love Pro Tools, okay, because I've been using it for a long, long time. But I also know that Nuendo is an amazing system, and you never know what's going to happen in the future, you know. But as far as microphones and preamps, whatever works, especially because in the sampling
The reason I was asking is that I know a lot of times when you want to record things that have barely any volume to them, you've got to find the right tool to get the fidelity out of it.
Absolutely.
So you got to, you know, like I know the APIs are really nice because they give you a lot of gain and like no noise. So you got to find like a really good no noise mic pre with a mic that has that sensitivity to reach before you start hearing the internal electronics of the mic pre's.
Yeah, but there are cases when there is a very cool sound that it's
absolutely
in there that you got to work in a different way to extract it. And somehow you can manage to do it. You know, but obviously, if you can start with a great sounding equipment, it's easier. Mm-hmm. But there are cases where I just did a session with an 80-roll portable recorder. That's the only thing I could use in that particular case. And it worked out great anyway.
Sure.
Wow, that's great. Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever used any of the 100K mics? You know, the mics that go up to 100K?
I heard the demo on the CD. I never really tried them. No. I heard the demo on the CD, and to me, it wasn't like something that I cannot do in another way.
I got you.
I know it's nice, you know, because you have this very bright high end, but there are other ways to get there.
Mm-hmm. And you recorded what sample rate?
It depends. It depends because, really, there's this debate that you always have to use the maximum sample rate possible. It's not true. Because
The reason what I'm saying is a lot of times when we record different kinds of sounds, because we want to have the ability to pitch manipulate.
Right.
So if you record a 192 and then you drop the pitch and start playing with it that way, you start keeping the overtones.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I was curious, when you have your preference – because I don't like to work in 192, but there are times I record in 192 manipulate it and then put it into either 96
right,
or 48.
Right, right, right. But there's been cases where I've been using 192, cases where 44, it's more than enough. Because actually 44 sounds better in that particular context. There are cases when you are just oversampling, you're wasting time, wasting space, and you're not achieving a better sound. Mm-hmm. Because there's something in those, in the 44, it's like the Mirage, you know, the old sampler.
Yeah.
I love that sound.
Yeah.
It's an 8-bit. It doesn't really matter because it has something.
No, it's...
And sound design, it's all about that something. And so the way you record, whatever you use, always have to be... connected to the way that sound is going to turn out. Mm-hmm. So
that's awesome because that's a really good practical way of, you know, it's all about the sound. It's all about
it is
what you're going to end up with, what it's going to sound like. And some people get, you know, they want to do stuff, but they don't think they have the right preamp.
I get a lot of emails from people that would like to start in being sound designers. And I mean, they ask me, what is the essential piece of equipment that I need? And I always answer the same. It's your brain. It's your imagination. Because without that, you can't do anything. It doesn't really matter if you have the latest technology. If you don't have an idea to start with, you're going to be stuck forever. It's like when you create a patch, okay? You can tweak that patch for days.
Right.
It's never going to be finished if you don't have an idea.
It's called a left brain ascendancy.
Wow. I learned a new word today. No, but that's so true, though. It's so true. It's like you just got to get out there and start doing it with what you have to do with. Let's talk a little bit about another thing that we saw on your site was the Xperi bass.
Yeah.
How do you pronounce that?
Xperi bass.
Xperi bass.
Because it's an experiment and it's based on a bass, so Xperi bass.
Why don't you just describe it a little bit for the people that are
on the Xperi bass, it's basically a double bass which has additional necks, has a violin, viola, and cello necks on the body, attached to the body of the double bass. So the reason why I built it that way, it's because I can access more notes. But most importantly, it's because every time you play a note on the bass, the additional strings resonate. Mm. They create a sound that is very rich.
Sympathetic harmonic.
Exactly.
Over, yeah.
And any time I'm recording or doing whatever stuff I have to do, I'm tuning the strings differently. The instrument itself has a different tuning from the regular double bass.
Right.
First of all, because I'm not a bass player. But I love to play it. Because even that, you see, my concept of not getting stuck with technical limitations also apply to instruments. I don't really care if I am not a virtuoso of the bass. If I want to give it a try, I'm just going to do it.
That's awesome.
Because I'm sure there is a way to obtain a great sound. You just put together your knowledge somehow. I mean, you know how to record. You know how to press a string. Well, then you know how to make a sound. And if you know how to play fast enough, you know how to play a tune or something, you know.
Right.
So basically, the Xperi bass came together primarily because I wanted to hear the sound of these additional strings through the body of the double bass. I always been intrigued with the physical modeling synthesis because I always thought that it's really cool that you can combine a guitar with the body of a cello, whatever. So what I'm doing now, it's basically doing that kind of thing in real life. So I'm just building instruments that give me that kind of experience. So I built the Xperi bass, and once I got the instrument made, I had to do some sounds. I had to make a track just to show even to myself how I was going to play it.
Right.
So I did this track and I did a video. The video was passed to Hans Zimmer.
Right.
And I was just freaked out. I want the guy. So basically they called me to be one of the soloists on the score of Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
And that's how I got into the project, basically. And then I just went down to their studios and they said, we love what you do. Do more. Just do more. And yeah, and that's how I got involved in the film, basically.
That's awesome. Because that, I mean, if you, we'll post a link on it on the website, but it's a cool looking instrument, and just you could tell they're just taken back. And I love the way you play it. You don't play it with just the bow of your finger.
Because
you,
I'm not a bass
hit
player.
It and you smack it.
Not a bass player. To me, you see, this is a new territory. It's a new experience. I have to find my own way of playing it. It's funny because I was at the NAMM show. I was talking with Abe Laborde Sr.
Right.
And he was telling me, you got to come show me and then you can teach me how to play it. I said, are you kidding?
kidding me. I'm going to teach you how to play the double bass. I love you, man. No, but seriously. But it's just that I'm playing it in by holding it in front because I'm playing it with the drumsticks, right. So I can't really be behind.
Right.
And I'm learning now. I mean, I did the video two or three months ago. I have some better techniques now. No, seriously, because I've been playing it a lot, and right. I found a lot of more interesting techniques and sounds. It's an interesting
so
instrument.
So what are you hitting it with, a drumstick?
Drumsticks, piano hammers, kick drum, you know, the thing. Yeah.
And is it a four-string? So it's a four-string upright?
It's four-string upright. The way I'm tuning it, it's a D-D-A-D.
Right.
Because I like to have the two lower Ds a little bit out of tune, because mm-hmm. when you hit them hard, because they're different strings, they also go out of tune in a different way.
Right.
And that gives me enough flexibility. You know, you can just play the full scale when you have a D and A.
Right.
And then I have the other, the last string is higher D.
Right.
That's more than enough.
So the two low Ds are the same octave?
Yes. And I also like it tuned that way because I want to hear the noise. Yeah. I want to hear the slides and everything.
Mm-hmm. It sounds great. And it has some of the ways you play it has a really good aggressive kind of just percussive thing about it that's just like, that's cool. Really cool.
You see, the Xperi bass, it's like a combination of the two things that I love to do most, creating sounds and playing them. Because if you take the Xperi bass by itself, you try to record it, it's not going to sound the same. Right. It's just because there is a specific technique in how I am recording it and how I am mixing the different signals and everything. And that, you know, when you then combine the different techniques, the different mics, positions and everything, you really get a lot out of one instrument.
Do you have a contact mic inside it?
No.
No, it's MIDI.
No, it's all acoustic. I tried to use some contact mics, but it wasn't really giving me...
Like piezoelectrics or
yeah,
anything?
Yeah. It wasn't giving me anything. Mm. I just like the acoustic sound way better. And
right.
I actually put the contact mics, because I customize stuff all the time, I put them under the bridge, actually.
Yeah.
But
the reason why I ask is I saw a guitar player. He had a multi-mic set up on just an acoustic. Mm-hmm. But he had a contact mic on the inside, so when he hit mm-hmm. the wood, it actually sounded like a drum.
Oh, yeah.
So, and he had a mic, a scratch mic on top. So he had all these mics that go...
Yeah.
So he'd like scratch the top, hit the back, and then play the guitar, and he would sound two or three-man band.
Absolutely.
And it's all one guy playing it.
Yeah.
It was at the NAMM show downstairs mm-hmm. in the back, you know, and I was just watching this guy play, and I'm like, I'm watching it, but I'm hearing two people. And I'm like, how are you getting that drum sound? And then he said, oh, I've got it going through. I got all these mics set up and inside it. And so when he hits
cool.
it resonates.
Yeah.
So I was just curious when, you know, you were talking about percussion.
Yeah. No, it's cool. I really recommend if people go buy a copy of the soundtrack and watch the video off your site, because it's entertaining. It's entertaining to see you talking with Hans and your energy.
It is a funny guy, because the way we were thinking to do the video was more like, you know, I'm coming here, I'm showing you the instrument, but then it went off. So let's switch to the pasta.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Okay, great. Let's talk about this then.
Well, that's great.
Well, why don't you give us that website, Mike? What is the website?
It's Diego's website, which is diegostucco.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you can find plenty of stuff around. You just type my name, because
yeah.
I post on several other galleries. There's a website where I post how I put the projects together. It's called Behance.net, because it allows you to really put together pictures and videos and descriptions and everything, because my website doesn't have that kind of flexibility.
How do you spell your last name?
Stocco, S-T-O-C-C-O.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Obviously, another last name that I butchered, but... Oh, no, I'm infamous for doing that. But, well, you know, Diego, thank you so much for joining us. I only wish you had more passion and more energy for what you do. I mean, you seriously, I want to go out and just start recording. You've amped me up, and it's great. You're a great inspiration.
You see,
I saw the videos that you for Atmosphere, mm-hmm. and I just want to thank you for you're inspiring people left and right, because you're doing some good shit sound. No, seriously, it's really great. It's great to meet the people. Sometimes you just see, you know, a patch on a synth, and you don't know the story behind it. But when we can find somebody like you that truly has a passion, and I can tell you love what you do.
In Omnisphere, every patch has a story, you know, because it really is like that. I mean, a lot of endless nights. And
it's a great instrument. It's deep too. It really is. I find all kinds of stuff.
Great.
So it's a great thing. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Oh, before you go though, we have to talk a little bit about the music from the tree.
Oh, music from a tree. Yes.
We'll have to link to that too. But what inspired you to do that video?
Well, that's actually a funny story because I was having dinner with a friend of mine. And this friend of mine is Italian like me. He challenged me to create a piece of music out of a impossible source. So out of the blue, I said, okay, I'm going to create a music with a stone. But then when I went home, I realized that it's kind of easy to do a piece of music with a stone because there's a lot of sounds that you can make out of the stone. And people have been doing that, I don't know, maybe since prehistory when they only had stones around. So I was just sitting in the garden like this. And then I turned to my wife. I said, "I'm going to do a piece of music with that tree." She said, "What?" I said, "Yeah." And how do you do that? I don't know. But that's exactly the point. I didn't know, and I just had to find out. And that's how this project came together, just by using whatever the tree was giving me. And then, of course, I had to customize some microphones to capture the low frequencies and everything.
Which I think is cool when you put the mic capsules on your fingers and the stethoscope, that one.
Right.
That's a genius piece of recording.
Well, thanks. Those are projects that I really care to do without any artifacts when it comes to manipulating the sound with synths or samplers. That's why I specify that on the website, because it's just the sound recorded, mixed, of course, because you got to put together all these things. But I didn't use autotune to fix the notes or enhanced it with sampler layerings, you know, just a little bit of waveform here and there, because I wanted to be realistic, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of talk about it because people, you know, some people say, well, this is not music. I said, whatever, man. I mean, who cares? What is music now?
And lucky for the tree, you didn't set it on fire like the
piano. Exactly. you always have to see the right side of things. I agree.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here. And we hope you come back because it's really great. You've got, like I said, it's, you know, I saw your videos on the Omnisphere before it came out and I was really stoked and excited. You guys did not disappoint.
Thanks.
You and Eric.
Thanks.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up. Greg, thank you for joining us. Anything over at Yamaha you want to plug? Anything?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of user groups. So it's kind of like kind of like forums, but you can actually meet people. And so we're doing those and we're kind of spreading those throughout many different cities. So different club Cubases. So we're starting one in LA next month.
Really?
So, yeah.
Where's that going to be at?
The SAE Institute. So on March 30th. And we're doing about 15 user groups throughout the country and kind of expanding more. So we should probably have about 2025 by the end of the year. So.
Have they announced what Nuendo 5 is going to be?
Not yet. It'll be good.
It'll be good. Oh, they're outside. We heard it here first.
That's right.
Exclusive. NAB?
Probably be out right around then. So I think we'll probably see it May-ish.
Right. Yeah. I'm predicting a big five in the logo.
You could be disappointed.
Maybe not.
Rob, what are you working on? Anything fun and exciting?
The two main things I'm working on are this blues album that we've been working on and off for the last few weeks is going well and getting finished. And the coding I've been doing for the songwriting contest website has become much more complicated than anyone ever expected, but it's almost done, and it's just really awesome. It's a really cool thing, which I'm actually working on with Bobby, and I know he'll be back here either next time or the time after, and we'll be able to talk about it because it should be live to the world by then.
You know, when you say it became more complicated than anybody expected.
Yeah, and I expected it to be pretty complicated.
No, but I just want to say something. With Rob, the reason why that happens, it seems a lot, is because Rob does things the right way. People go in, they think they want to do it this way, and you cannot work on a project with Rob without it being the right way, and usually the best way. So
it's turning out to be the best way. It's just to make it seem simple to the public is so much more complicated than anybody.
So basically, you invented Internet 3.0.
he could
you know,
have.
In some ways, kind of. I mean, it's a user interface that is not like anything that anyone has seen recently that didn't require Flash. Because this thing works perfectly on an iPhone, and there's a lot of it that you would swear is Flash.
And it'll now work on the iTablet.
The iPad?
The iPad.
Whatever it's called.
Hey, is there
you know what? I'm a huge fan of Flash, but for this particular project, the iPhone was really important, and I wanted iPhone people to have a similar experience, so I just made it 500 times more complicated for myself so they can have an easy experience. And I better get thank you notes.
We thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any software you don't know? You know what it's going to be?
One Logic. Of these... And I've tried. And I've bought every single version and read the manual 6 times, which says something about the program. We'll talk about it later, though.
Yes, we will.
I think one of these days you're going to get like a baking program and it's just going to totally baffle you.
That would,
wait,
actually.
What is this?
That would.
Bill, are you working on anything?
Yeah, I'm still working by week in Austin, Texas. I commute from L.A.
Sheesh.
I thought I had a long commute.
I honestly am under NDA, but it's a very equally complex audio project. It's got a 119-page patent.
Wow.
So I'm basically building the audio division.
Wow.
Right now it's me, and eventually 6 to 8 months it'll be 10 guys or so.
Will you be able to talk about it later on?
Soon enough.
Okay, great. Well, we'll look forward to that.
But what's more inspiring is that I went to see Stomp for my third time. Yeah, I first saw it when it first came out. And then you coming to the show. My roots was always recording, found percussion, all of it. I spent the last 15 years in learning Logic. No, I'm kidding.
Well, then you're halfway there.
No, I'm saying, I've recently just come into a dead end. Like right after NAMM in my music, I just hit a dead end. And that's the first dead end I've ever hit. And it's cool to start...
You mean a dead end creatively?
Dead end. Mm-hmm. Like I did all those tutorials about Ableton, learned that thing upside down. It's so insane, and yet it was so insane that I was left with no ideas.
Wow.
Right?
Right.
You know the feeling, right?
Yeah.
And so seeing Stomp, listening to you talk tonight, having that little Sony D50 recorder that you recommended – I'm hoping to find a new music.
I found, by the way, you can buy the little microphones to it now are like $40.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's an impressive little device. Yeah. Scott recommended a mobile recorder.
It's a Sony D50. D50, yeah.
It's a microphone?
That's a Sony recorder. Uh-huh. But then somebody showed me that you can get online the mics that they use in the Zoom and the D50.
Did you guys see the NT6, the Rode NT6? They basically have the capsule and the body separate.
Oh, you can separate them.
Yeah, and that's on the Music from a Tree. I was just attaching them to my fingers.
Right.
And pointing them like this. I did because I hate microphone stands. I cannot stand.
Very confining.
It's an old technology. It's just boring. Mm-hmm. So this way was, you know.
So, yeah. So I'm maybe seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, the electronic thing has been an amazing journey.
Right.
I can't hear that uniqueness that I want to hear.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll find it.
You will find it, my friend, because I've heard you play the drums and you're pretty awesome. So I will tell you that. Brandon, what about you?
Same old stuff still. Oh, headphones. Thank you very much, Bill. still working on Prince of Persia, and we just finally got today in, we got the word that we are getting that new special project that I can't talk about in.
Nice.
I told some of you. So it finally came in. So I'm excited to work on that this week. So
nice.
Very fun.
And Brandon also helped me with some sound design for an Orbitz commercial that I'm doing. I appreciate that. Forrest, you just got back?
Yeah, just got back and really need – and I don't know why I've been having such difficulty focusing on my own music. I seem to have no problem going to other people's projects, but actually, you know, spending the the amount of time that I've needed with, right. you know, on piano and synthesizers, and actually looking forward to getting into Omnisphere. I was actually just hip to it while I was on the road.
Oh, great.
And, you know, because I've been crying about mainly arpeggiators, really good arpeggiators, and I heard that there are some wicked ones on Omnisphere. So
you can link it with RMX as well. Yeah. You can just drag the groove from RMX into Omnisphere.
Can you really?
Yeah, of course you can. Because, you know, when you play the arpeggiator, the feel doesn't match. So the only way to actually match it, it's just you drag the groove from the MIDI control groove into the Omnisphere arpeggiator, and the feel, the whatever division you have going on with the groove, it's there right away.
Sounds like a logic trick.
You can it's not based on the host. No. It's based on Omnisphere. Either you're using it in
that's awesome. I got both those.
So you can design your arpeggiator. Really?
Yes, and you can also design your own MIDI sequences and bring them inside Omnisphere as an arpeggiator pattern.
Because
it's MIDI based, basically.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, it's really great.
Wow. I can talk to you when we're all done recording.
I almost feel like I should go to therapy because getting to doing my own, I've talked with Bill about this sporadically in frustration because it's just so hard. Like, it's hard for me to focus on my own stuff, and I don't know why.
Wow.
And I really need to. But then it's an interesting thing about Stomp. When I saw Stomp, I was so mad, and all my friends, I'm like, we were doing that when we were 7 years old in the neighborhood. Like, that's how I started playing drums, was on pots and pans and garbage cans and buckets and stuff like that. But yeah, that's a good show to get some inspiration, though. So that's
sounds like we need to get a therapist for one of our guests. Scott.
Hello.
What are you up to? Well,
we've been losing all the award shows. No, we've done well, though. We've been nominated for an Academy, Star Trek.
Right.
We got nominated for an Oscar, a BAFTA, an MPSC. So far, we've lost the MPSC and we've lost the BAFTA.
Wow.
So,
too bad. It's a great movie, man.
Yeah, you know what? It's great to be nominated in those, so that's always good. Season of the Witch, I thought was gone. It's back.
That will not go away.
I think we're over a year now.
Wow.
So, yeah, why not? And but the big movie I'm on right now is The Death and Life of Charlie St. Cloud, which I think that comes out in October.
Wow.
But we should be finished with it end of May, and it's a great flick. It's really good, and I think we're going to test it in front of an audience in the near future. But so far the studio likes it, and everyone who seems to see it or work on it goes, you know, this is actually a really good film. It's Zac Efron.
Oh, good.
But Zac Efron in a more of a dramatic role. So it's kind of Ghost meets Field of Dreams. But instead of it being between a man and a woman, it's actually between an 18-year-old and an 11-year-old, their brothers. And so it's a really touching story, and it gives you the goosebumps. It's fun. I mean, it's
cool.
Some good film people.
I look forward to that. And Diego, are you working on anything? Any new
yes, I have
products
new,
or
experiments? Well, I can't really say what I've been working on, but I've been working on stuff and I built new instruments. Today, I was recording music with a bonsai.
Really? Keeping the whole tree thing.
It's going to be my new video because, you know, after the music from a tree, I got an invitation to do a performance at the Grammy Museum. So they asked me, is there a way you can bring something? I said, definitely not the tree. So I just gave myself this impossible task of making a piece of music with a bonsai. And today I was recording it. I will have to mix it and just hear how it comes together.
Right.
But it's totally experimental.
I have no expectation, and I hope people will just...
So I just have this great image at night of you just digging up your tree and putting it in your car.
Well, I'm also thinking, like, I'm thinking if like, the master quality performance is music from a tree, but then the road show would be, like, music from a shrub. That's like the MP3 version or something.
Yeah, I'm thinking you might have to boost the low end on the bonsai a little bit.
You know what? I'm just thinking, how do you design a road case for a tree?
It's got to be
Diego
soft.
Diego will be able to tell us.
That's awesome.
It is pretty cool.
That's great. That's great. Now, let me ask you, what musically, your background? Are you a drummer, a piano player?
I think I'm a piano player, but I never really went to the full extent of learning the piano. I started breaking stuff when I was really young. I broke my first piano hammer when I was 9. And it was an emotion. It was like, pung! Oh, so that's how it works. And then I started hacking guitars and stuff.
You know what? That's so fantastic, though.
You talk to who, you know?
No, it's great because there's a lot of people that are afraid to make music. There's a lot of people that are afraid to make sounds. And just when you hear somebody as passionate as you are, and you just say, hey, just go out there and challenge yourself.
You see, it's funny, but I am scared until the last moment every time I do something because I really don't know how it's going to be sounding at the end. But if I put this kind of fear into myself when I'm starting, I would never start.
Yeah.
So I just jump, whatever happens.
That's awesome.
And sometimes, you know, most of the time, there's something good coming out of it.
Wow.
So
wow, that's awesome. Talk about inspirational. See you guys.
I'm going to run out and destroy some mics.
What are you doing, Mikey?
What are you doing?
Oh, I'm working on an Orbitz commercial right now, and I'm going to Vegas for a trade show, the Digital Sign and Expo. It's for digital signage because I'm working with a company doing some video stuff. I've been doing a lot of video stuff lately, but I really miss the music.
Going to the dark side, huh?
No, it's just they're.
That's the light side, actually.
They're paying some bills right now.
And do you realize if we had started listening to a BT MP3 file at the beginning of this podcast, it would almost be over
by
now?
Right.
Almost.
You're right, but right about now?
Right about now, you'd accidentally hit skip.
I'd actually hit the back button. But yeah, it's I still enjoy music, and I am pumped. I want to go out and start recording just
do
like
it.
Everybody else.
Do
or
it.
Go set a piano on fire.
Yeah. All right, well, hey, if you have any comments or questions or you want to get in touch with anybody, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. You can also catch me at mike@itsamikething.com. That's Mike at itsamikething.com. And be sure to check out our Facebook page and our MySpace. And don't forget steinberg.net. All right. Well, thank you, Greg, for joining us. And thank you, Diego,
for joining us.
And for myself and the rest of the guys, take it easy. And we'll catch you next time. See ya.
For listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.